Hello and welcome back to our class on physical chemistry of polymers, to its fourth lesson unit entitled Real Chains. In the last two lesson units, we have started our endeavor to derive structure property relations for polymers by considering the most simple imaginable form of a polymer, the ideal chain, in which chains are hypothetically constituted of monomer segments with no own volume and without interactions. In the second lesson unit of this class, we have considered several structural models for such an ideal chain, whereas in the third and the last lesson unit, we have made the step to properties and encountered one of the most relevant properties of polymers at all, which is their entropy-based elasticity. In the present lesson unit, we now make the step from ideal to real chains by refining our model to take into account what we have ignored so far, the not negligible volume of the monomer segments in the coil and the presence of interactions between them. How can we expect these two effects to affect the shape of a real polymer chain? Let's regard them separately. The effect of a non-negligible volume of the monomer segments, meaning the existence of a certain finite monomer co-volume, will certainly manifest itself such that certain spots in space cannot be occupied by monomer segments as they are already occupied by other monomer segments. With that, the ideal random walk shape of an ideal coil that can actually show self-crossing turns into the shape of a self-avoiding random walk, as shown to you in figure 28 of our script. In this walk, self-crossing is not possible, thereby being referred to as self-avoiding walk. The blocking of a portion of the space by monomer units for other monomer units to occupy it causes a certain volume in our system to be excluded. This is what we refer to as excluded volume. In contrast to ideal chains, real chains exhibit excluded volume. That means a real chain has less freedom of arrangement than an ideal chain. It must expand to avoid the excluded volume to be occupied. In addition and interplay with that effect come the interactions between the monomer segments and their surrounding environment. We can generally distinguish between attractive and repulsive interactions in physical chemistry. We now consider both these interactions between monomer units, and thereby I mean monomer units not directly neighbored along the chain, which are trivially interacting because they have a chemical bond connecting them, but monomer units far apart down the chain that can nevertheless interact through space with each other. And in addition to these monomer-monomer interactions, there is interactions of the monomer units with a potential solvent in which the polymer finds itself. That means monomer-solvent interactions. So in total, we have to discuss four kinds of interactions, monomer-monomer and monomer-solvent interactions, which can both be attractive or repulsive. In physical chemistry, we describe and capture such interactions by interaction energy potentials. The most famous one is the Lennard-Jones interaction potential, as shown to you in figure 29 of our script. We adopt this potential energy function also for the interaction between a monomer unit with another monomer unit along the chain that is not directly neighbored to the first one, but interacts with it through space. At low interdistances of these two species, repulsive interactions between them dominate, leading to a strong rise in potential energy if the distance between the two species is made too short. This is shown in the left branch of the diagram curve in figure 29 of our script. By contrast, at larger distances, attractive interactions between the species dominate, leading to negative, that means favorable potential energies. The overlay of both the attractive and the repulsive part create a potential energy minimum, a potential energy well in Lennard-Jones potential at the most favorable distance R equilibrium. In the right limit of the curve in figure 29, at very large distances, the potential energy levels off to zero because if the two species are very far apart from each other, they don't see each other and therefore also don't interact and therefore don't care if they are brought into a little closer contact or even further separation. A little footnote to the Lennard-Jones potential at that point. This is a potential energy function also often referred to as 612 potential, because, as said, it is composed of two parts, one accounting for repulsive interactions and another one accounting for attractive interactions, whereby the one accounting for the repulsive interactions has a scaling with a distance of r to the minus 12, whereas the one accounting for the attractive interactions has a scaling with a distance of minus r to the minus 6. The two exponents in these power law dependencies constitute the name 612 potential. A further remark to the remark in this context: the very steep scaling of r to the minus 12 of the repulsive part of the potential is actually somewhat artificial. We could also use different exponent here, like r to the minus 13 or r to the minus 11. what that exponent is just meant to do is to provide a steep rise up of the potential energy towards infinity if the mutual distance between the two species gets too close. The reason for the strong rise in this part of the potential energy function is eventually based on the Pauli principle. When we bring molecules too close together, their orbitals start to overlap such that electrons occupy the same volume that have the same set of quantum numbers, which is forbidden according to the Pauli principle. That means at least one of these electrons must escape to higher orbitals, which costs a lot of energy. And this causes the crank up of the energy in this part of the potential. We somehow arbitrarily pick the number of 12 because it's somehow symmetric to the other number of 6. That is the scaling law exponent of the attractive branch of the potential energy. This scaling exponent is more substantiated. What makes these attractive interactions? In general, we can state that attractive interactions emerge from electrostatic interactions. The strongest kind of electrostatic interactions you know from ionic interactions, which is the Coulomb interaction. This is what is not meant here. Such electrically charged ionic species are beyond the scope of consideration here. And by the way, their interaction potential, the Coulomb potential, has no scaling with r to the minus 6, but with r to the minus 1. Somehow similar to such true ionic interactions, however, are dipole interactions. There is three kinds of such dipole interactions. The first kind is the interaction between permanently existing dipoles in the sample. If the molecules that we consider that interact have a permanent dipole moment, these dipoles can form pairs and thereby interact with each other. This is an interaction that scales with r to the minus 6. It is referred to as Debye interaction. A variant of that interaction is if we have two species, one being a dipole and the other one per se not being a dipole. However, when being in close proximity to the first, the dipole of the first can induce a dipole in the second such that the two can pair. This is a favorable induced electrostatic interaction that also scales with r to the minus 6. It is referred to as Keesome interaction. An even totally unpolar neutral species can show momentary dipole moments due to spontaneous thermal fluctuations of their electron density distribution. Whenever such a temporary dipole moment emerges somewhere in our sample, it immediately induces paired ones in its environment by neighboring molecules, because again, that lowers potential energy. This type of thermally fluctuating dipole moments that pair with each other, which we generally refer to as correlated quantum fluctuation, also scales with r to the minus 6 and is referred to as London dispersion interaction. The three latter interactions, the Debye interaction, the Keesome interaction, and the London interaction, are commonly summarized as van der Waals interactions. These are the interactions captured by the attractive part of the Lennard-Jones potential energy function. And those constitute a physically substantiated scaling with r to the minus 6. We will now apply this mathematical description of molecular interactions to quantify the attractive and repulsive monomer-monomer and monomer-solvent interactions in a real polymer system. To avoid confusion in this distinction of four different kinds of energies, we summarize them to only two effective interaction energies, namely attractive and repulsive monomer-monomer interactions. We do so by including or mapping the monomer-solvent interactions into the monomer-monomer interactions. In a sense that, for example, if there is attractive monomer-solvent interaction, this manifests itself such as if there were repulsive monomer-monomer interaction. Also vice versa, if there is repulsive monomer-solvent interaction, this manifests itself such as if there were attractive monomer-monomer interactions. This allows us to map the monomer-solvent interactions together with the monomer-monomer interactions to effective monomer-monomer interactions. When we speak about attractive effective monomer-monomer interactions, this means that there either are attractive monomer-monomer interactions and/or there are repulsive monomer-solvent interactions, which then, as just said, manifest themselves as if there were attractive monomer-monomer interactions. By contrast, if we speak about repulsive effective monomer-monomer interactions, this means that they either are repulsive monomer-monomer interactions or/and this means that they are attractive monomer-solvent interactions that in fact act like as if the monomers would repel each other. The resulting effective monomer-monomer interaction potential has again a Lennard-Jones type appearance, as it is again composed of an attractive part and a repulsive part, both incorporating the actual attractive or repulsive monomer-monomer interaction and the respective inverse monomer-solvent interaction. Based on this premise, we can generally delimit three boundary cases. The first boundary case is when monomer-monomer contact is favored over monomer-solvent contact. With that, we have an attractive, effective monomer-monomer interaction that yields a pronounced minimum in the Lennard-Jones potential energy function U of R, as it is also indicated in figure 29. For most polymers, these attractive, effective monomer-monomer interactions are of the van der Waals dipole-dipole kind, leading to an interaction energy gain, that means depth of the potential well in figure 29, in the order of magnitude of minus kBT. This is the most usual common case. We can actually generalize this to mixing thermodynamics and physical chemistry in general. In very general, actually, a species A prefers to interact with itself than with another species B, because whatever interactions the molecules of A undergo, be it dipole-dipole coupling or London dispersion interaction or maybe even hydrogen bonding, they can find a best mutually fitting partner to do so in their own kind. Whatever interactions A has, another A will have exactly the same. Whereas a B can at most be similar, if it's similar in structure, but never be as a perfect match as another A. The same discussion can be adopted to the letters M and S, meaning monomer and solvent, which generally leads to the preference of monomer-monomer contact over monomer-solvent contact. We can summarize this by the proverb, birds of a feather flock together, or in German, gleich und gleich gesellt sich gern. This is a point where we can insert a little footnote excursion, so to speak. Chemistry is sometimes strikingly comparable to human relationships. A field where you can argue almost endlessly, for example, is reaction kinetics in comparison to dating or matchmaking. We know that the frequency of collisions of molecules is higher and thereby also the reaction rate constant is higher if the concentration is higher, which could be somehow transferable to the circumstance that dating people in a larger city is easier than on the sparsely populated countryside. We also know that forming chemical bonds, which corresponds to forming human relationships, sometimes needs some energy of activation, some catalysts. We also know that some bonds are not permanent, but can break, corresponding to breakage of relationships. Even substitution processes can be discussed. I think this goes a little too far here at this point already. What I want to mention here is that the principle gleich und gleich gesellt sich gern is somehow transferable between chemistry and human relations. In chemistry, whatever interactions a molecule can undergo, it can best do so with its own kind, as we have just seen. In human relations, at least at a first glance, it also appears more promising if people are alike and share common interests, sympathies, and antipathies. We will see in some minutes, however, that this is not yet the best scenario, but there is one that is even better than that. The second boundary case is the one where the monomer-monomer interactions are equal to the monomer-solvent interactions. In this case, a monomer is careless whether it interacts with its own or with the other kind. That means when mapping this into effective monomer-monomer interactions, these are zero. This special scenario occurs when monomer and solvent are very similar, or actually more than very similar, when they are alike. That means when they have practically the same chemical structure. In that very case, just as we have just discussed, whatever interactions they undergo, they can do equally fine with their own or with the respective other kind. In this case, the Lennard-Jones potential energy U of R does not exhibit a potential well, but only the strong repulsive upturn in the limit R towards zero, which we, by the way, also refer to as the hard sphere limit, because that part of the interaction energy is the one that we would also encounter if we would try to press hard spheres, billiard balls, onto one another such to obtain distances closer than 2 times their radius. The third boundary case is the one where monomer-monomer interactions are disfavored over monomer-solvent interactions. This is a rare special case scenario in which our monomeric species, or in general species A, prefers to interact with the other and not with its own kind. As we have just generally argued, this is against the general expectation that birds of a feather flock together. So what can cause a chemical species to interact with another one more favorably than with its own kind? This can only be the case when there is beneficial mutual interactions that can only be formed between the components, but not amongst themselves. The prime example of such interactions are hydrogen bonding forces, where our species M in our nomenclature is, for example, a hydrogen bonding donor, whereas species S in our polymer nomenclature is a hydrogen bonding acceptor. In this case, these two species can form a hydrogen bonding pattern that they could not form among themselves only. At this point, we can touch up to our analogy to human relations again. Earlier, we have said that at a first view, a relationship is good if the partners are alike, sharing the same interests, same sympathies, and same antipathies. Here, however, we see that an even better relationship is built if the partners are not alike, but mutually complementary, meaning that they don't resemble, but complement each other, such that 1 + 1 is greater than 2. In this case, we also have no well in the potential energy function that would be ascribable to monomer-monomer attraction, but by contrast, we only have repulsion. We have the general hard sphere repulsive term that we also have had in the latter boundary case, and on top of that, we have even further effective monomer-monomer repulsion, which is not actual monomer-monomer repulsion, but rather the desire for the monomeric species to interact with the solvent. After having clarified these different kinds of effective monomer-monomer interactions to us, we now go a second step towards a description of a real chain, which is a calculation of the probability to find two monomeric species at a certain distance r through space. We can find that probability from a Boltzmann term of that interaction energy potential, because the Boltzmann term in general describes us exactly that. It describes population numbers of states, which can also be viewed as likelihoods that a certain state is populated, as a function of their energies relative to the thermal energy. This is expressed to you in equation 3.1 of our script. If we plot this Boltzmann term, we obtain a figure as shown in figure 30a of our script. At very short monomer-monomer separation distances r, the values of this Boltzmann term are close to zero. This means there is a very little or zero probabilities to find the monomers at those close distances, which makes sense, because at those close distances, the repulsive hard sphere part of the interaction Lennard-Jones potential dominates, thereby prohibiting them to come as close. The highest probability is found at the most beneficial equilibrium distance that corresponds to the potential well part in the Lennard-Jones potential function. Here, the Boltzmann term has a value of around E. In the limit of very high separation distances, however, the probability levels off, here at a Boltzmann term value of 1, because there also the potential energy gets independent of the mutual distance of the species. In a final calculation step, we just subtract a numerical increment of 1 from that Boltzmann term, thereby delivering a variant form as expressed in equation 3.2 of our script. It is referred to as the Meyer F function and plotted in figure 30b of the script. When we now integrate over that function, as indicated by the shaded area in figure 30b, we obtain the excluded volume, which corresponds to the volume in space that cannot be occupied by monomer units, because that volume fraction is blocked by the repulsive part of the potential energy function of other monomers, and by the trivial circumstance that each monomeric species has a certain finite own covolume. The latter, by the way, can actually be viewed as a special emphasized expression of the first. The own covolume of the monomers is nothing else than the really blocked part of the potential energy diagram at low separation distances. If we look onto the plot of the Meyer-F function in figure 30b, we see that the repulsive part of the potential energy, the one at low distances, contributes something negative to the Meyer-F function, and therewith also to the integral over that function. Whereas the attractive part around the minimum in the potential energy diagram, or the maximum in the Boltzmann or Meyer-F function, contributes something positive to that very function, and therewith also to the integral. The excluded volume now, however, is defined as the negative integral over that function, as detailed in equation 3.3 of our script. Therefore, the repulsive part of the potential energy function, which is the one at low r distances, contributes something negative to the integral and therefore something positive to the excluded volume. Repulsive interactions make the excluded volume larger. By contrast, the attractive part of the potential energy function, which is the one at distances around the minimum in the U of r function or the maximum in the Boltzmann term, contributes something positive to the integral and therefore something negative to the excluded volume. Attractive interactions, therefore, attenuate the excluded volume. They make it smaller. This can actually go so far that the attractive interactions balance the repulsive ones, meaning attractive and repulsive interactions cancel out each other. This is a scenario actually somehow indicated in figure 30b of the script. There you see that the shaded area in the left and the right-hand side of that function are of somehow similar magnitude. You can guess already that this is a very special state, in which attractive and repulsive interactions are at balance. We name it the theta state, and will readdress it in a couple of minutes again. Based on this co and interplay of attractive and repulsive monomer-monomer and monomer-solvent interactions, as eventually reflected within the excluded volume quantity, we can go ahead and classify a variety of solvent situations for a real polymer in a surrounding medium. The first situation that we consider is named athermal solvent. This is encountered for a situation where monomer-monomer interactions are equal to monomer-solvent interactions, which we know constitutes a Lennard-Jones potential with no potential well, but just with the repulsive hard sphere branch at low monomer-monomer separations. If the interactions monomer-monomer and monomer-solvent are the same, so is of course also their temperature dependence. As a result, change of temperature has no effect on these interactions and therefore also no effect on the solvency state, which is why we refer to it as athermal state. A chemical realization of such a situation would be for a solvent that is structurally identical to the monomeric repeating unit of our polymer. An example could be the solvent ethylbenzene, because ethylbenzene is nothing else than the monomeric structural repeating unit of polystyrene. In that case, where we don't have a potential energy well but only the hard sphere repulsive branch, the negative contribution to the integral of those interactions is not compensated by any positive interactions by a potential well, and therefore the integral is maximally negative, which makes the excluded volume maximally positive. An exact calculation delivers an excluded volume of L cube, which is the monomer volume. Each monomer unit excludes exactly its own volume for others to be occupied. A still good but not as perfect solvent situation is the good solvent state. In that state, monomer-monomer interactions are slightly more favorable than monomer-solvent interactions. This causes a small potential energy well in the Lennard-Jones potential function that to some degree compensates the hard sphere repulsive part. In this case, the integral over the Meyer F function will still be dominated by the negative part constituted by the repulsive interactions, but at least to some extent be compensated by the positive part constituted by the slight attractive favorable interaction between monomer and monomer units. Therefore, the excluded volume will still be a positive quantity, but not with its maximal extent. As such, it will lay somewhere between 0 and L cube. An example for that situation would be the solvent toluene for the polymer polystyrene. The toluene molecule is still closely similar, but not exactly the same as the monomeric structural repeating unit of polystyrene. A very special state is the one we have already referred to, the theta state, realized in a theta solvent. In this state, there are actually quite pronounced attractive effective monomer-monomer interactions, so pronounced that the potential energy well that comes along with those exactly corresponds to the hard sphere repulsive part at low monomer-monomer distances. As a result, the negative and positive contributions to the integral over the Meyer F function are equal, as actually indicated in figure 33 of the script, which then causes an excluded volume of 0. At that state, where the attractive interaction exactly balances the repulsive interaction, causing an excluded volume of 0, we have a situation of a pseudo or quasi-ideal state. The chain at that condition can actually adopt the form of a Gaussian coil with random walk type conformation, because the excluded volume is 0. No volume in space is actually excluded, and so in fact, we have a situation close to the one of the phantom chain scenario, where monomers practically can occupy same spots in space. Not because they don't have volume, but because the exclusive effect of their volume is exactly balanced by their effective monomer-monomer attraction tendency. We see already that this theta state is a very special one, and therefore also a very delicate one. It's realized by a specific set of conditions. For example, for the polymer polystyrene dissolved in the solvent cyclohexane at the theta temperature of 34.5 degrees Celsius. When looking at this example, we see that here the solvent cyclohexane is not so similar to the monomeric repeating unit. Which makes sense because, as we have just said, in the theta state we actually have already quite pronounced effective monomer-monomer attractive interactions. So pronounced that they just balance the hard sphere repulsive part. And this is given for a solvent that actually already has some kind of mismatch in its structure compared to the one of the monomeric repeating unit in the polymer. One little footnote to this special state. It may ring a bell in your head, as you have actually encountered something very similar in your earlier physical chemistry education. The pseudo or quasi-ideal state of the real gas. Just like a real polymer, a real gas also differs from the ideal one in a sense that the molecules in it have own volume and interactions, both repulsive and attractive. We capture this in the framework of the van der Waals equation, where we introduce two van der Waals parameters A and B to quantify these very interactions. At a very specific condition, referred to as Boyle temperature, these interactions are at balance, causing the real gas to behave like an ideal one. It's not such that these interactions are now absent, but they are at balance. This is what we refer to when saying quasi or pseudo ideal. A truly ideal state is one without interactions. A quasi or pseudo ideal state is one with interactions that are at balance. One little further outlook at this point. From your elementary physical chemistry classes, you also know a yet alternative mathematical way to express the real gas equation of state. Alternative to the van der Waals equation, we can also use the approach of a virial series expansion. In this approach, we have virial coefficients, the most important one being the second virial coefficient, as most often we actually interrupt the virial series after that second virial series term. By comparison of the virial series expansion to the van der Waals equation, we can see that there is of course conceptual and mathematical relation in the sense that the second virial coefficient is equal to some kind of ratio of the van der Waals parameters A and B, also including temperature. At the Boyle temperature now, the balance of the attractive and the repulsive interactions causes the second virial coefficient to be zero, thereby letting the virial series expansion of the real gas law to effectively adopt the shape of the ideal gas law. In our lecture, we will come across something very similar when considering the virial series expansion of the osmotic pressure equation of state of real polymers, but this is to come later in our class. For this point, we take home with us the condensed message that the theta state for real polymers and the theta temperature for which it is realized resembles the Boyle temperature for real gases. Due to the quite pronounced structural mismatch of a theta solvent to a polymer at theta conditions, the theta state is actually at the verge to polymer non-solvency. The example for polystyrene in cyclohexane at 34.5 degrees Celsius is one in which accidental drop below that theta temperature will cause precipitation of the polymer. So as a result, working at theta conditions can be actually quite painful for experimentalists because there is a high risk of accidentally precipitating the polymer out of the solution by accidentally dropping below the theta temperature, which will then enforce an experimentalist to take a long time to redissolve and also re-equilibrate the polymer before experiments can be conducted. Polymer theory people, however, very much love the theta state because it resembles the ideal state, and the ideal state is one very easy to capture theoretically. Just think about our lecture. We only needed two lessons to capture it. When we consider a situation worse than the theta state, we can distinguish two further, only theoretically existing states, the bad solvent and the non-solvent state. In the bad solvent state, monomer-monomer interactions are in fact much more favorable than monomer-solvent interactions, and so the strong effective monomer-monomer attraction causes such a strong minimum in the monomer-monomer interaction potential function that the integral over the Meyer-F variant form of it is positive, such that the negative of that integral, which is the excluded volume, turns out to be negative. An example is ethanol for the polymer polystyrene. We can consider this even extremer in the sense that the monomer-monomer interactions are so pronounced and so much more favorable over the monomer-solvent interactions that all solvent is fully expelled from the coil and the coil completely collapses. An example is water for polystyrene. In this case, we will have a maximally negative excluded volume with a value of minus L cube. This state is some sort of anti-state to the athermal solvent state, whereas the non-solvent state that we've discussed before is some sort of negative or anti-mirror image of the good solvent state. This distinction in bad solvent and non-solvent state is actually artificial. What in fact happens at such experimental conditions is what we have already said, polymer precipitation. This fine distinction into a hypothetic bad and non-solvent state is made in the theory community only, due to this mirror reflection of the non-solvent to the athermal state and the bad solvent to the good solvent state. To complete the listing we've just made, we should actually add one further very special case that we have named already briefly, namely the one where monomer-monomer interactions are disfavored over monomer-solvent interactions. This is one where we have an interaction energy potential not only without any well, but also with a further repulsive part in addition to the Hartsphere one. Here, the excluded volume is larger than the one we have previously denoted to be the maximal positive one, namely L cube. That means in that special solvent state, the excluded volume is actually larger than L cube. What can cause such a state? One reason we have already mentioned. Such a state is encountered if there indeed is more favorable monomer-solvent contact than monomer-monomer contact. For example, realized by a scenario where there is mutually beneficial hydrogen bonding interactions between monomer and solvent. Another situation where such a state can be present is if there is actually monomer-monomer repulsion, which manifests itself such as if there were monomer-solvent attraction. This situation, even though it's still special, is actually not a niche case. We encounter it for polymers that carry like charges at each monomer unit, so-called polyelectrolytes. Polyelectrolytes are very important polymers. They serve in water-absorbing superabsorber hygiene products, for example. The most famous example is the fully deprotonated form of polyacrylic acid, which is named polysodium acrylate. Here we have a like, in this case a negative charge at each monomer unit, and these like charges repel each other by strong Coulomb repulsion, and thereby the monomer units in fact desire to be far apart from each other in space. And so, in addition to their inherent hard sphere repulsion at short distances, they have a further additional Coulomb repulsion, which makes the excluded volume larger than the natural one that we have just discussed before. There's one more point that I'd like to discuss here. In the listing of solvency situations we have just considered, of course, a special state is the theta state. You can guess so not only by the circumstance that it has its own name, namely the theta state, but also by the circumstance that this quasi-ideal situation is, of course, a very special one and a very interesting one. When is that theta state realized? We have seen already it is realized at very delicate conditions in a solvent fluid medium, namely if we have a theta solvent at the theta temperature, like cyclohexane at 34.5 degrees Celsius for the polymer polystyrene. The theta state is also realized at a different condition, namely in a polymer melt. This seems to be rather unexpected, because in a melt, a polymer is surrounded by its own kind. And that is a situation we have just defined as the best solvency state, the athermal state. Why should that be a theta state? Well, strictly speaking, thermodynamically, it indeed is an athermal state. A polymer is surrounded by its own kind, and this is how we have just exactly defined the athermal solvent state. That means each polymer coil has a tendency to expand. However, as the total volume of our system is fixed, no polymer coil in this melt can actually expand, as they all want to expand. This is visualized to you in figure 31 of our script. There we see a schematic of several overlapping coils in a polymer melt, and one of these coils is specifically highlighted by blue coloring. Below that schematic, you see a representation of the segmental density over space in the area where the blue coil sits for the blue coil and for the other black ones, which at any point in the system sum up to the overall volume fraction. The blue coil occupies a Gaussian segmental density distribution as we have just derived in our last lesson unit, around its center. The situation that it is surrounded by its own kind now leads to a scenario that we have maximally effective repulsive monomer-monomer interaction, which actually would lead to a broadening of that Gaussian. However, this is limited by all the surrounding black Gaussians in the vicinity neighborhood of our blue coil, which all have the same expansion tendency. If everybody wants to expand and the volume is constant, no one can in the end. And so, despite a scenario that thermodynamically corresponds to the athermal solvent situation, the conformation, the size, the shape of a polymer in a melt is that of the theta state. We can also condense this down to the further bottom line. Excluded volume interactions that normally make a coil expand in an athermal or good solvent state are screened by overlapping segments of other coils in a polymer melt, leading to quasi-ideal or theta-type coil statistics and shapes. With that, we're at the end of this lesson unit. We have made the step from the ideal to the real polymer by actually taking into account the circumstances that we have so far ignored, that the polymer monomer segments have own volume and interactions with each other. We have derived and learned about a fundamental quantity that summarizes and quantifies all these interaction effects, which is the excluded volume. In a specific state, the theta state, the excluded volume can actually be zero, causing the shape of a real coil, which actually is that of a self-avoiding random walk, to be again the random walk. A question that is next on the agenda is now, how exactly is the shape of a real coil? To what extent is a real coil expanded compared to its ideal statistics in a good or athermal solvent situation? This is a question that we must answer, because the overall goal of this lecture series is to reach out for structure property relations. And for those, of course, we first must need a structural information. That was the approach that actually very successfully worked for us for ideal chains. We now want to adopt this also for real chains. For that, we need an expression for the coil conformation, similar to the one we already have at hand for ideal chains. This is what will be on the agenda of our next lesson unit.